Brooklyn.
All the way.
Thank you. My name is Reva. I'm a compulsive overeater from Brooklyn, New York.
Yay!
I hope this is all right. I would like to tell people we're having in New York. We're having a retreat. We're having a retreat in New York. It's at 179th Street in Jamaica, Queens. There are two levels of payment, so you can commute for $160 plus food, or you can sleep there in your own private room with a semi-private bath for $255. The details are here, so I didn't have any more flyers, but I made one of my own, so that's that. Okay. So I didn't understand that I was supposed to only think in terms of the second step, so I thought in terms of I only understood that this is about spirituality. So I'll tell you, when I heard that, I'm just going to go with where I was at. When I was married, I was a battered wife. I have been divorced since December 73, real long time. But in 1972, I did what a lot of women who were being battered do. I did what a lot of addicts do. I took a whole sleep. You need a fix, you're going to get it. It's going to be one kind of a fix or another. My fix was a vial of sleeping pills. An hour before I took them, I didn't know what I was going to do. They went into my mouth the way food goes into my mouth. I don't know I'm going to eat it. It's just there, and I just do it. And that's what I did with a vial of sleeping pills. And I had two sons who were, I think, 11 and 9. And when they came home from school, I was being wheeled out on a gurney. My mother was standing over me. I had to have my stomach pumped. And when I came back from that, it was a spiritual experience. There's nothing more spiritual than when you're losing your life. And when you're ready, before you do that, you really got to be ready. I wasn't playing with it. I did not reach for the help. Nobody came in and took me to the hospital because I was saying, oh, look what I did, please save me. I lay down against what a doctor told me to do. He said, get up and walk and drink coffee. And I said to him, this. And that was my message to the world, basically. And for my husband, I felt, well, you got my body, you want to beat it now? And just ready to go. In a state of real clarity, I told myself that my children would be better off without me. And they weren't going to be hurt. And so I was taking the way out. I want to tell you, after your stomach is pumped, it's harder than before you took the pills. And a doctor told me, right after my stomach was pumped, he put his face in my face in the hospital and said, you don't have to die from those pills. You can get paralyzed. He wanted to give me a little bit of frothy emotional appeal that maybe something would stop me the next time. And the thought that I could make my life worse, that's about the only thing that would stop me. And then I had to come back and face my children, whom I had deserted, who had been gone through this horrific, traumatic event. And there I was, and the neighbors shunned me, and I had been volunteering at the school. They didn't want to see me anymore. You're stigmatized. You don't want to show your face. I wake up, and I didn't want to be on the face of the earth. I didn't want to be there. And that doctor said I could only make it worse. That is a real spiritual surrender. That is truly powerless. That was powerless to the point that I knew I couldn't talk to a doctor. If I could have spoken to anybody, if anybody heard what I was saying, and this was the 1970s, and I think they still went by the rule of thumb, don't beat your wife with anything thicker than your thumb. So it didn't seem that bad to other people. And I was already buried alive. Nobody heard me, whatever I was saying. And there I am. Well, you know where you go. If you have to live, if you're being literally forced to live, and I couldn't bear that I would put my children through this again, only one place to go. Church, synagogue, I don't care where it was. I went to every place people were praying. I prayed my ass off. I prayed. I was truly in a state of spiritual genuflecting because I was down on my knees and I was screaming, I don't know what to do now. I don't know how to wake up in the morning now. And when I was in that place, that's when I screamed, God help me. I didn't know if God was there. I didn't even want to bother asking. It didn't matter. I needed to pray. That's what mattered. I needed a place, I needed some guidance, I needed something out there, I needed something. And it was, God, please help me. And I sat in synagogues, and I sat in churches, and I sat in this, and I walked off with prayer books, because if I stole them. I still have them in my little, because they saved my life. I was hearing something I had to hear. And I felt as if I was being heard. I wasn't speaking to anybody. Somebody came over to me once in a synagogue and said, you come here, but you never say anything. You don't talk to anybody. I don't. I was utterly, utterly in this place with God. I heard a sermon. I heard a song. I read something in a prayer book, and a week passed, and I changed. And then something else happened, and by the end of maybe 6 months, 9 months, I knew what I had to tell my children. I knew what I had to say to this awful psychiatrist who wasn't helping me but keeping me married. I knew what I had to say to my mother, who was very ambivalent about standing up for me or me getting out of this marriage. She really did not support me. Nobody else heard me. I couldn't communicate with them. And I was utterly in a spiritual place by myself. And I wasn't by myself anymore. I was genuflecting. And then after that happened, I felt as if I had been gone across the Red Sea. I actually felt a separation between myself and my former husband. I knew everything cleared up during a sermon in a synagogue. Everything clicked, everything changed, and I was ready to leave. Whereas before, I was not. And at every point, I can't tell you, this was not an easy thing, dealing with the lawyers and the property and the blah, 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 and it all went. And I had faith. I acquired faith. This was long before I ever came into OA. So then, okay, I get my divorce, a few years pass, I moved to Brooklyn. I was then living in Queens, and eventually, I was always a compulsive overeater. Only I was a really good restrictor. So my plan for the future, I am going to, I have to say this, when I got divorced, I was about 40. I am now 78. I've been abstinent for a little more than 14 years. But I came into the program probably about 1978. And I felt as if I knew God. I felt as if you can't tell me anything about God by the time I got there. But when I got divorced, I looked really good. I looked like I was 25 and I was 40. And I started to date guys who were 15 years younger than me. Not bad. My kids were getting to be teenagers, and I could go out with them. When they got to college, I would go out, and nobody knew that I was their mother. And I felt, you know what happens to your ego, right? You know what happens to your ego. But you see, I already inside felt like shit. But on the outside, I looked good. And that's really, you know, I felt worthless. What would happen if I put weight on? And I was now binging in a way that I hadn't ever binged before. And the binging scared me, and I didn't even have a word for it, and I didn't know what was happening. But I knew that I had to find the right man. And if I didn't keep my ass small, it wasn't going to happen. And if that wasn't going to happen, I had no reason to go on living again. I still was the same person who I felt my kids would have been better without. Nothing in there had changed. The outside looked really good. So God forbid I put weight on. I could diet. I dieted really well. One time I dieted so well that I lost 15 pounds in 2 weeks, and everybody wanted to know the miracle cure, follow me. I went down from a size 16 to a size 8 in about 3 months. Follow me. I had the secret every compulsive overeater wants. They want to zip it off like it's something they can just throw off. They want to take the fat and zip it off. I could do it. Well, I want to tell you, my recovery is here. This is my sponsor. My voice of God comes right from here. I do what this book tells me to do. I don't believe that I have an allergy. I don't think Dr. Silkworth would be too upset about that. I don't think he would think I have an allergy. I believe I have a neurological problem. I believe my brain needs to be rewired. I believe that when I pray, my brain gets rewired. I was a teacher of learning disabled kids, and when I taught them, if they had a weakness, say in reading, what I did was I worked with color and words. You would take something, if you saw the picture, the king's language, the king's speech. Well, he can't stutter while he's singing. So you take one part of the brain, you connect it to another part of the brain, and bingo, the bad part goes away. Well, prayer makes the bad part go away from me. Prayer and meditation, and that's the only way on step 10, what used to be automatic for me, I can't resist, I will succumb, becomes, and now I recoil from a hot flame. Those are neurological responses. It all comes from my head, my brain. And lo and behold, 14 years. I binged in the program. I binged for 20 years in the program. Could not stop because I didn't understand powerless. And let me tell you what I didn't understand. I didn't understand that powerless is not what I did last night. It's not the accident that happened yesterday. It's what's going to happen to me tomorrow. I couldn't get that. Why would I? Hadn't I just been the diet queen of the Western world? What do you mean telling me I can't do it? I could put it down. I once put it down for 2 years. You can't tell me I can't put it down. I did put it down. I just got to do it again. 2 years. When I got to be a size 8, I stayed a size 8. I now had what the beauty queen of the Western world here needed. She got every guy to turn around, or that's the way I felt. So, you know, I was like I had just won the lottery. You can't, and so now I just wanted to continue that. I felt I had it. You couldn't tell me, well, I had an accident last night. But, and so it was always going to be that I will find an answer tomorrow. And if I'm not finding an answer now, it's because my mother, let me tell you about my mother. Let me tell you about how painful a life I had because of her. Let me tell you about how bad it was. I used to come to meetings and dump. When I finally got abstinent, which was after this happened to me, I went to my home meeting and I kept apologizing to them for having taken up so much of their time with so much bullshit. I wasted all their time and I gave them nothing. If I hadn't been able to dump there, I don't know if I would have lived. I don't know if I would have. I kept believing that God heard me there. Kept going back for 20 years. What I also figured out was that a food plan and I don't get along. Because there's no food plan I'm going to be able to stay on. I also figured out that if you told me to call you before I ate, I would call you, I would tell you what was turning me on, I would tell you how great that thing looked, and I'd go and eat it as soon as I hung up. I mean, it didn't matter to me what I... Nothing stood between me and food. That's because I have a neurological compulsion, and Dr. Silkworth hit it right on the head. It may not be an allergy where you break out in hives. The problem in every addiction is you go into craving. No normal person experiences craving, period. And I read the New York Times, I get all these articles, I have a bunch of articles which will back up that I say it's a neurological problem, yada, 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 you don't have to study it. But I brought this one. This one is August 1st of 1995. I want to tell you, I look around what's going on in this world. Fat signaling hormone is clue to weight control. A fat signaling hormone from 1995. Anybody have any medication that's helping you with this? This is 1995. They're out there beating their brains in, trying to find a way to get us to stop eating. You can't find it out there. You can only find it in here. We're the only guys who've got any kind of track record. I've got 14 years. And that cannot be found in Weight Watchers or Jenny Craig or any kind of place. My food went down. I no longer experienced craving. I wasn't in obsession. And when the obsession lifted, God Almighty, who would ever want to go back and pick up again? I really did. And the secret is, I wanted to stop eating compulsively. I really wanted one. I didn't care whether I lost weight. I didn't care whether I got a guy. I didn't care what other people thought. I didn't care how big I looked. I didn't care. I just wanted one thing. I prayed hard. One thing. God, the food does not jump into my mouth by itself. The hand. This is the culprit. It carries food to my mouth. Please let it stay down. If I pick up again, I may die. Please don't let me. Please don't let this. Please don't let this happen to me. I hear a lot of people, and I hear them because they're me yesterday. They want to stay in control of the weight. They want to keep their weight down. They want to look this way. They tell themselves, oh, next time, I'm going to remember to this. Well, you're not going to remember. Read chapter 3. Chapter 3 tells you, you cannot remember. This guy, Fred, at the end of the chapter, he has a mental blank spot. And this brilliant man, a winner from today till tomorrow, who, like me, felt that he could do it. He's been doing it. Up to that very minute, he had been doing it. His foot crossed the threshold, and he drank. I want to tell you, me, a couple of weeks ago in a mental blank spot, on Sunday, I had gone somewhere and I had my cell phone with me and I stuck it in my bra because it was comfortable. So Monday morning, I'm going to the gym. Somebody calls me on my cell phone without thinking of what I'm doing. Mental blank spot. I put the cell phone in the bra of my swimsuit. I then went to the gym and did a whole hour of aquasize. I gotta tell you, that's my brain. I had to understand and I had to follow everything that this is surrender. I am powerless. I will commit suicide tomorrow. I will marry another man who will beat me up in a heartbeat. I will step in front of cars, which I did. I rode my bicycle into a moving car at an intersection because I'm so sane. I didn't stop for a red light. That's the brain that's going to make the choice of everything in my life. My recovery started on page 67. It said, we do not fight or argue. It changed my life. I read that single line and decided to do that in my life. No sponsor, I just decided to do it. Changed me forever. Psychic change. I am powerless. I cannot handle this food thing on my own. I may have done it yesterday, but it's really going to be tomorrow. That's the problem. And tomorrow is unknown. Whatever happens will be unexpected. It will come at an unexpected moment. The God that brought me out of that state when I could not live, I saw no value in me living. God saved me from dying, and God wanted me to live because I had two children to take care of, but aside from that, I was ready to die. I was not 40, 38, 37, something like that. That's who I was. That's who I am. Without God, without this program, if I want everything, this is my God. This is the voice of God. It tells me how to take an inventory. It tells me how to orient myself to everything and everybody in the world. Everybody and everything. Just do what it tells me to do. Follow directions. Step 10, I will just leave you with this. Step 10 says, we had a daily reprieve. And studying the big book, the way I learned how to study it, I looked up the word reprieve. A reprieve, on a daily basis, I get a reprieve, which means a stay of execution. That's my God. Each day, I get a stay of execution. Thank you, God, for this day. No matter how painful or whatever happened in it, I did not pick up. I don't have obsession. I don't have craving. I am in surrender. Thank you, God. Thank you.
Barbara and Natalie, would you pass those out? We have a gift for everybody who came tonight. Jersey Shore Intergroup was selling some nice pens, so we picked up enough where everybody can have one. We've talked a lot about why we came to believe in a higher power, and I think the second half of the evening we're going to talk a little bit about the second half of the step, the insanity, which we usually hear described in our pre-program thinking. When you come to OA, if you listen to the literature that's read, either how it works or our invitation to you, the directions are very clear. We're told it's not a diet club. So the arrangements of the molecules of the food that we eat do not cause recovery to occur. We're told that this is not something we can understand and make it that better. Understanding does not change anything. So it's not therapy. Coming to rooms and talking about problems does not start the recovery process. It's very clear, because the second step tells us, that it's a higher power that can release the obsession. There's many different diet groups that one can go to. Some of them will concentrate on the physical aspects of the food. Some of them are group strengths, you know, let's rev that willpower up. OA is unique in the manner in which it says there's a spiritual solution. If we only do food with a new sponsee, what are the odds of them getting and staying abstinent? How can just food work without the steps? It can work a little while, but it's not going to move one forward in the recovery process. I believe as soon as I started to work the steps, the obsession was lifted. Within 3 days of getting my first sponsor, I felt, as other people described tonight, I felt like a new woman. On page 55 in the big book, it says, talks about where you find this higher power. Actually, we were fooling ourselves, for deep down, in every man, woman, and child is the fundamental idea of God. It may be obscured by calamity, by pomp, by worship of other things, like food. But in some form or other, it is there, for faith in a power greater than ourselves and miraculous demonstrations of that power in human lives are facts as old as man himself. Miraculous demonstrations of that power in human lives. That's called qualifying in meetings. We talk about how our belief allowed God into our lives to help us remain abstinent, recover, and help other people. Now, the second page of your program, I've reproduced two stories from a recent Lifeline that focus on step two, on hope. You can take those home tonight if you need a little bit more hope to float your boat. And we have a multitude of step two prayers on the next page. I pray for an open mind so I may come to believe in a power greater than myself. I pray for humility and the continued opportunity to increase my faith. I don't want to be crazy anymore. Pretty simple. Now on the last page, it's facing outward, we have a little writing exercise for you. Has everybody gotten their pen?
No, I don't have that.
We don't get up and get them up here. Barbara, are there any more?
Yeah.
Did everybody get one? Okay. On the left side, it says, list what you were taught, what you thought God was when you came to program. And if you'd like to just fill out, take a moment, and just fill out that left side before we take our break. List what you were taught or what you thought God was, or even today. Raise your hand when you're finished, please.